Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I leave Tuesdays open every week for anyone in the audience or elsewhere who has complaints or has problems with the injustices going on in this country or any other issue that you want to address. I leave Tuesdays open so that you can come on, you can call in, you can express your concerns, your feelings, feedback, vent out, go for it. But what I want to start talking about, first of all, is I leave certain days open on my radio show to allow others to have their own show, to be able to speak about some of the issues that they are addressing. On Friday and Saturday, it is the Indigenous Native Indian Women. On Sunday, it is Lawrence Drink, who is also known as Sparky Lee on Facebook, founder of the Legacy Program and Each One Teach One. I let Reginald Clemens, who is incarcerated on a wrongful conviction and has been for years, I let he and his friend have Mondays to express their desires or feelings or whatever's going on with their injustices. But one of the things is I want everyone to know, because there have been a couple whom I have actually, or at least one that I had invited to come on the show if they want, because they are coming up with some kind of the land or whatever it is themselves, some kind of thing that they're into. I don't know who it is or what it's about, but I did say if they want to come on, they can. One of the things I want to mention is humility. We're living in a country where people have to feel they're important. They have to feel like they have to bring themselves up to make themselves look good. And I don't go for things like that. Someone once said in introducing me to a friend, "She's for real." I didn't know what they meant when they said that, but now I do. And I am for real. And I have made enemies because of it, and I have had people respect me because of it. So I want everyone to know you don't have to impress anybody but yourself and the Creator. Don't feel as though you have to side with people just because they are either the majority or because they have a title or because of whatever. I am a prisoner advocate. I advocate for the incarcerated men and women and youth. I am an advocate for first-time offenders who have gotten a life in life without parole, who have gotten the death penalty for one mistake. And many of them are possibly wrongfully convicted, because there's a large population of people who have been executed the death penalty before the people that did it realized or found out or learned that they were innocent. In this country, people are too quick to judge. People are too quick to kill because someone has made a mistake. Whether that person that made the mistake shot someone, or whether they killed somebody in a different way, self-protection, I don't know. Or whether they beat them, we don't know what's going on. But we do know that there is an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. Instead of this foolish government trying to open facilities so that these people can get help, they throw them in prison like cattle for their own benefit, their own motives, money, prisons for profit. We have a government that has the nerve to preach to other countries that are doing better than we are. But because the people of this government, the United States of America, who they don't even acknowledge the unity because of people with different pigmentations, or people that are not have not been blessed with the fortunes, with the monies, the wealth that some of them have been blessed with. And believe me, those of you out there and those of you in government and across the country who have wealth and feel like they're high in social statuses, just like with Nebuchadnezzar in the Bible, God took it away from him because he thought he did it all on his own. If God has blessed you with wealth or with any other benefits, you should be sharing, you should be caring. If you're not, you're going to lose it. Believe me, God sees all things. And when I pray morning and evening, I always tell him, I thank him for seeing all things and knowing all things. Because what many of you might think you're hiding from the public. You're not hiding from the Most High. Just so you'll know, I don't do this show because I enjoy doing it. I do this show because I am bringing awareness. And those that come on my show are bringing awareness. I don't need anyone to come on the show that feels that they have to make themselves look good or better than others. When I ask someone to come on the show, if you have an opportunity to be asked, either yes or no. But I have to check my schedule. I am this and I am that. And I've been doing this and I've been doing that. I didn't ask you for all that. I asked if you want to be on the show to build yourself up or whatever. Because some of the guests that I have on this show are awesome, knowledgeable, experienced, have written books on it because they know about the injustices. They know about the mental damage that's done to a lot of our incarcerated individuals because of the injustices that go on behind those prison walls that many of you don't even know about. There are prisoners being beaten, scalded, burned, ice, everything. Many of you don't even know about it. And you say you do the crime, you do the time. If you only knew that they're suffering more, not just from the time, but they're suffering more from abuses, severe abuses, severe deprivations, being targeted, kept from progressing, denied opportunities to participate in programs as others are. I hope the people that are listening to this, and I'm not talking about those of you that already know what goes on behind those bars, but for those of you that don't, for those of you that think that these people are paying their price for the crimes they committed, believe me, they're paying more than their price. If it were you, you couldn't tolerate it. There are many people incarcerated who are suffering so much as we're speaking right now. There are people who have been killed, not suicide as many claim, but have been killed. And many of them, probably and mostly, not just by the prisoners, but others overseeing. There was a case down in Florida, Daryl Rainey. Many of you probably have heard of him, who was put in a shower, locked in the shower. The water was turned up to 180 degrees. The prison guards left him in there and walked away laughing. It was so bad that people, other prisoners on the block, could hear him screaming for his life, scalded. By the time they got to him, every piece of skin and muscle was off the bones. Is that paying for the crime he committed, a mentally ill individual? There are so many cases like that. Even with the Aaron Hernandez case, I even heard that from another advocate that couldn't say anything because she didn't want the prisoners on the block to get in trouble. That he was taken out of his cell and gone the whole day and that night, brought back, and the next morning claimed to have committed suicide. We don't know half of what goes on behind those prison walls. And someone who suffered torture in Marion Prison in Ohio once said, when a prisoner, you ask a prisoner how they're doing, if a prisoner says, yes, I'm doing fine, or if a prisoner says, I've been abused, that individual who is out now, who got out years ago, said when they say something like that, it's 10 times, 20 times worse than what you think or what they're telling you. Prisoners are unable to tell you everything that's going on in those prisons around the country. We have legislative members who do a little bit of virtual meetings or getting together and talking about criminal justice reform. But they're no different than any advocate because they have the power. They have the power to go into these prisons whenever they want, randomly. They have the power to come up with changes. And yet they're acting like us. They're acting like us, advocates, coming together to talk about ways to make changes. They're not supposed to be coming together like us to talk about ways to make changes. they're supposed to be listening to us and maybe going in randomly to see what's going on and then making the changes, not deciding or talking about it, but making the changes. The unfortunate thing is when it comes to political, it comes to constituents. When it comes to constituents, these people are worried about votes. Me, I'm going to vote for somebody that I feel is a man or a woman, not afraid to make decisions, not afraid to be themselves, not afraid to help those who they know are suffering. I'm not going to vote for somebody just because there's a lot of people saying I'm going to vote for him because he's doing what I want him to do. I want to vote for somebody that's going to say, regardless of what you say, if I see something wrong, I'm going to do something about it. Years ago, several years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I don't know, they were talking about abolishing life and life without parole sentences. Short-lived. That same year, it went out the window. You know, there's a few people who have lost loved ones in such a horrific way, terrible way. And there's some people that have lost a loved one quickly. They didn't suffer. It was so quick. So when it comes time to talking about doing away with life and life without parole sentencing, you're going to have people that are in opposition. Those people who have had someone suffer so much. But there are also people who have committed offenses, either when they weren't in their right mind, or whether it be self-defense, or whether it be some other reason, mental illnesses, even addictions. You know, people, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are addicted to some kind of substance. And what we don't realize is that these people, not all of them, but many of them, are on drugs because of traumas that they went through. And those traumas, they're trying to cover up by drinking or drugging. And as they say, not all of them. People are stereotyped. People behind those bars are all stereotyped. Prisoners are stereotyped. But what they don't realize is that all prisoners in all circumstances vary. They're all different. We shouldn't be stereotyping. What we should be doing, as many of us are doing, is getting to the bottom of it. We're researching. We're writing to prisoners. We're advocating for prisoners. We're learning what their lives were all about. We're trying to find out what brought them to where they are today. And you'd be surprised, because many of you have gone through the same thing. And many of you may have had support. But there's a lot of people out there who have done crimes because there was no one there for them. Many of them were on the streets. Many of them did not have parents. They did not have siblings. They did not have the support that many of us have. So we can't judge. We can't say anything to them to make them feel as though they were wrong. We have a caller, 323. State your name, please.
Yeah, my name is Joe from Montana.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Welcome aboard. So do you have a topic you would like to discuss? Or a response
yes,
to what
I do.
Please
no,
go.
I haven't heard much of what you've said. I saw the show, so I thought I'd call in because I like the show. And this is what my topic is about. It's because it makes sense to try to rehabilitate people who have gone to prison so that when they do come out, they feel that they have some kind of hope. So that the people who do go to jail and prison, that they don't become a burden on society. Now, you know better than I do that to try to get that point across to the normal, let's just call them civilian, the normal citizen of the United States, they don't have much. They can agree with you intellectually, but they don't emotionally grasp it. Not until...
Yeah.
You know, the government opens up centers in their neighborhood, and then they don't want the centers there. So here's what I'm thinking. I think you know that you have to, in order to get things done in your direction, you're going to have to apply pressure on Congress. I mentioned that one show before. But it takes more than just talking about it. It takes you and other organizations like yourself willing to put the work in to show Congress that if they don't do what you want them to do, they, not you, can suffer consequences. Sort of on the ideal based off the actions of the convoy that's in Ottawa now. You know, but you have to have the cooperation of other organizations. And I know that's not easy because I've tried to do that kind of stuff myself.
Yes. But you know, I wish people, others were like you in these areas, because you're doing something about it. You're calling in, you're talking about it. And as you said, it takes others to do the same thing. And there's so many people out there that are either, they have their own motives, or they just don't want to go against the majority or whatever the case may be. And you're right about programs. They need to have things, and a lot of times they release prisoners with no transition. They need to release them from prison into a transitional facility and then work with them into transitioning out to the communities.
They absolutely has to, and because otherwise people will just continue with recidivism. They'll keep continuing going back to jail. As a matter of fact, some criminals who are in jail for 10, 20 years, they feel so comfortable in jail that if you tell them that they're going to release them, they get panic attacks. They want to stay in jail.
You know, there's a prisoner, an incarcerated individual in one of the prisons in Massachusetts who is trying to help an 84-year-old incarcerated individual who is disabled. He's 84 years old, and the prisoner said he's afraid to be released because he has no family anymore and he has no place to go. And I'll tell you, his last name is Hallett, and the reason I'm saying this is because people are advocating for this 84-year-old man to be released. I've heard there's people in their 90s, people in wheelchairs, and this is this is compassionate release is what we have to look at as well. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, the state, if anything, if the state is going to be protective of its citizens, then it should take into consideration the fact that once a person becomes a convict and then an ex-con, something has to be done about it. Otherwise, that person is going to continue being a predator on American society. I personally think that Congress wants this to happen, because I actually think that this scum, that they take money under the table from lobbyists in order to create chaos and division. That's my personal opinion based upon, you know, other things that I have read and experienced, but that's my opinion. I don't think Congress is there anymore for the good of America.
No. And a lot of people would agree with you on that. They just don't, a lot of them are afraid to say anything. But, I look at what's right. When I listen to somebody talk and it sounds right, I'm going to do it. And as I was saying just before you came on, a lot of legislative members are looking at criminal justice reform. They're looking at a lot of these things that you're talking about, but yet they start it, and as soon as they start it and then they start hearing from their constituents, then not everybody is going to be liked for what they're talking about or what they're agreeing on. You know, we can't serve, as they say, we can't serve two masters. So our legislative members who are in control, Congress as well, as you mentioned, these people have to decide, are they going to do the right thing in spite of a lot of their constituents disagreeing, or are they going to do the wrong thing because their constituents disagree? We have other countries, as you see and hear about all the time, calling in, talking about the comparison between the prisons in their country compared to the prisons in our country. Why do we have 2.3 million when other countries don't even have close to that? You know, why do they have all these excellent programs and they treat the prisoners like human beings rather than numbers, while we have, like you said, a high recidivism rate?
Yeah. Well, because there's money involved, too. The judges make money when they send prisoners to for-profit jails. And again, the lobbyists, they make money. They give money to the people in the states and the people in Congress, because in some way they're making money off of it. They want chaos and confusion. Take a look at what's been happening in America and around the world for the last 2 years with the vaccines.
Oh,
you know, Fauci flip-flops on the vaccines all the time. I'm sure you talk to people about trying to help your cause for prisoners, and you probably met a lot of people who flip-flop. Yeah,
yeah,
they're afraid of their constituents, but it's the job of congressmen to try to convince the constituents that this is good for them. If we have 2.3 million people who are in jail, and if there's a 70% recidivism rate, when these people are out, they're creating crime. If somehow we can get a 10% recidivism rate, then the people who do come out who have hope as a result of either billionaires or Congress, they can repair their lives. It will save lives from their constituents. I just think the congressmen and the congresswomen, they don't present the idea strongly enough to their constituents because they don't care.
Exactly. It's money, like you say, prisons for profit again. We go right back to that. I had somebody asking me about if I knew anybody that would, doctors, nurses, dentists, that have practices, if they would put some free time to help people in the community. They were considering opening up a free clinic for the indigent in the community, which I think is good because there's a lot of people out there in the communities that are indigent, can't afford to go to a hospital or a doctor. And so I was trying to think, are there doctors, dentists, you know, nurses, and anybody in the medical field that would be willing to put in a certain percentage of free time to help out in areas like that, like pro bono lawyers? But I don't know. That's
well, it. I was going to take elbow grease, you know, because I'm telling you now, Leona, if you want something done, and I'm not just saying you, I'm using the generic you, people want something done, they have to put an elbow grease. A lot of times Americans, they just think all they have to do is wave a magic wand and something appears, or they wait for somebody else to do it, you know? That doesn't happen.
No.
You got to do it yourself or it's not going to get done.
You know, that's the problem. We have too many people content in this country. You know, we are a wealthy country, a blessed country, and people are so content with the way things are going in their lives until it hits home. You know, I've listened to the news so many times, heard people say when something happens in their communities, oh, this has never happened in our community. This is a good community. This is a good neighborhood. All these neighborhoods were good at one time. As time goes on, it just keeps expanding and expanding because there's no help being given to these offenders, no help being given to these people on the outside committing crimes. So you can live in the best neighborhood in the world, and eventually it's going to hit your neighborhood. Because no one is out there addressing, as you said, no one's out there addressing these issues.
That's true. And not only that, but Congress or the attorney generals of various states are making things worse. They're letting the criminals know that the bar for grand theft is raised from, let's say, $250 to $1,000. So these criminals say, well, you know what? I can rob $900 worth of merchandise and never spend a day in jail. That's an incentive for them to commit crime, not to stop crime. And that's as a result, like I said, these people don't care. It's all about creating chaos and confusion within the American populace.
Exactly.
Sounds like a conspiracy theory, but, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist.
I have to say something else, too, and I know this is unrelated to prisoners, but this thing that's going on in Russia and Ukraine, all the billions and millions of dollars being sent over there from this country, and I can see sending, you know, helping other countries as well to send things over there to help the Ukrainians. But take care of business in your backyard as well. You know, all this, they were talking not too long ago about this country almost being in a recession. You know, the financial aspect of it. And yet, $300 million sent over there is one thing. But when they say that Joe Biden wants to send $10 billion over there, we're going to eventually, this country is going to be a third world country while every other country is being built up. That's the way I look at it.
Well, we're definitely headed for a crash. You know, major economists have said that. And we're already a third world country. We just don't know it. But when the gasoline prices, you know, hit $4, $5, $6, $7, $8, it might dawn on people. And when, you know, a loaf of bread costs $5, $6, $7, yeah, it might begin to dawn on people. But there are going to be a lot of people, Leona, you'd be surprised. They can go to jail, and they'll still think that it was either Trump's fault or the Republicans' fault, somebody else's fault, except whoever they voted for. Whoever they voted for, you know, that person's an angel.
I don't see any angels in any party anymore. It's sad to say, but like I just...
Hell no.
I don't see it. It's just so sad because there was a time when you didn't mind going outside. You didn't mind doing a lot of these activities. Everything was fine. But now it's like, what's happening in this country? What's happening in a penal system? You know, what's happening in the community?
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, it just goes to show they don't care.
No.
No.
And
they don't care. And, you know, and the American people keep voting them back in because the American people don't know any better.
The American people have forgotten that the government is the people. So we need to come together in unity across the country and start demanding that these things occur. And one of the things that has to occur is reform in the penal system, not just to make a decision to free everybody, but make a decision to transition a lot of these people. If they have to do it one by one, take these people, have them go before a committee, go before a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, a counselor, go before a group that is formed to evaluate and to figure out ways to help this individual to transition from this point to the community. There can be facilities. You know, I did the petition to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. It may not go into effect because only about six people have signed it. But what they don't realize, a lot of them are thinking long-term residential, that means they're going to be out in a few years. It doesn't mean that at all. It means that they will transition from a prison into a long-term residential substance abuse facility or a long-term residential mental health facility or a long-term mental health anger management facility. It doesn't need to be for 2 years because as a social worker, I know when we used to have people go for residential treatment, it would last 6 months to a year and then they'd be released. That's like a recidivism right
uh-huh.
there. So have these long-term residential treatment facilities, whether it be for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, at least they're getting the proper treatment. They're having the psychological treatment, the medical treatment, the spiritual treatment, and even help transitioning back. You know, there's occupational therapy, and they have career centers, employment centers. We can work with them on trying to help them to get employment, try to help them to get housing, whatever the case may be, when they're in this long-term residential treatment facility. But people don't understand.
Yeah.
They think residential treatment facility means go in, treat them, and push them out in the community. It doesn't mean that at all. You know, it doesn't. We need to work with people. We need to work with them, and we need to let them know we care, and we want to see them doing the right thing.
Yeah, but I'm not going to hijack any more of your show. I'm going to put myself on mute so that I don't take up any more of your time.
No, I'll tell you, Joe, what you're saying is just what needs to be said. I wish more people would talk about it, too. What you're saying is exactly what needs to be said. We need to do something about it, and we need to get
yeah.
more. When they close down these mental institutions, they shouldn't have closed them down. They should have renovated it. They should have brought in new people or people that can take it, people that can do the job. Because, you know, I had to go to the hospital the other day. I thought I had a blood clot in the back of my leg. And the person that was doing the ultrasound was from Cuba. And he was doing it so hard, I was screaming. I had to end up getting off the table and tell him to forget it. And he said, I've been doing this for 20 years. I said, you know, there's a lot of people who have been on their job with their professions for 20 years, 40 years. The nurse, when I was walking out, came to me. She said, if you can wait a few minutes, I'll get someone else to do it. So they apparently knew that this has happened before. But if people have been on their job for 20 years There's people that have been on their job for 40 years. It doesn't matter how long you've been on. There's different, there's social workers that will take your kid in a minute and put them in a foster home, and there's social workers that will take the time to take the parent or parents to counseling or wherever they have to go to try to keep their kid in the home with them. So you're going to find two different types of social workers, and that happens even in the medical field, in the mental field. Whatever the case may be, you have to put effort into it if you're committed to trying to help these people.
Well, you're right. And when I was in marketing and sales, there's an old bromide in sales. When somebody is a salesman and they've been around for a while, and they say to their supervisor, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years, because they don't like, you know, the new suggestions that the supervisor's given them. So the supervisor would say, well, that only means you've been repeating the same error 9 years in a row. So it's the same thing with anybody else. You know, I've been here for 20 years. Yeah, but you've been messing up for 20 years. So don't be proud of your track record. So,
it happens
in every profession, like you're saying.
Huh? I've always listened to my superiors. I'm going to tell you, from the time I was in my late teens, I worked for the AMP in Austerville on Cape Cod for 10 years. My boss at the time was Frank Christofalski. He taught me. I mean, I worked in every department, so I can go in a grocery store and tell you exactly how to do each department. Then I went from there. I worked for a couple of doctors, Dorothy and Claude Delay. They were like my second parents. Unfortunately, they're both deceased now. But they taught me everything. Uh-huh. You know, medical, Claude had Parkinson's and dementia. Dorothy was still, semi-retired, so she was still working. Claude and I used to walk down the beach in Falmouth along the ocean into Woods Hole. You know, they treated me like their own daughter, and they taught me. They enrolled me in music appreciation classes. We used to go to Boston Symphony all the time. We went to Bermuda. When I started working for the Department of Social Services, Cape and Islands office, they told me, I never swore. I never said the word damn. They said, social workers would tell me, Leona, when you start working with these adolescents, you're going to be using all these words because this is the way these kids talk. But they taught me a lot. And that's why I tell the audience, if people want to call in and they don't agree with me, they can call in. They can discuss their opposition to what I'm saying. They can say anything they want to me. I don't let anybody or anything bother me, because we learn from every little experience that we go through. This is how we gain wisdom and knowledge. This is how we gain security, because I don't want to have to live according to what my peers throughout the country are doing. You know, you listen to the news, you have all these young people, they talk the same, they walk the same, they dress the same. It's almost like we have to be in unison with other people.
Yeah, in unison, right, right.
And we have to be our own person. God didn't create everybody to be exactly the same. And that's why I say, even in the penal system, prisoners are all different. We can't look at all, we can't stereotype them all and say they're all bad. Yes, there are a lot of real seriously bad criminals, but there are so many good people amongst them, the lambs amongst the wolves in these prisons, that never had an opportunity to defend themselves. They didn't have the money to hire an excellent attorney. And some of these attorneys are just as corrupt as the judges and others out there. So we have to look at all sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell you personally about two involvements with corruption that I was in, but I won't. I think I'll just keep them under my hat. But,
you don't have to talk about corruption. You don't have to say names or anything, but there is corruption out there. We're going to all experience
a lot of it. Yeah. So people have to become, you know, more aware of that, and people have to wake up to other things besides their own particular comfort zone. But if you and other organizations like yourself can get together and show the congressman that you've got, the will of the people behind you, it's going to take work, it's going to take marketing, and it'll take a lot of work. But if you can do that, then you can get their ear. Otherwise, you better change your name to Rockefeller, because you're not going to do it unless you do it that way.
That's the truth. But there, like I say, there's a lot of advocates that only go so far. We wonder why They don't, you know, and we encourage people all the time. You know, they can do it from their home. Go on the internet, type in your legislative members, you know, and especially those who are working toward criminal justice reform. Make some calls, call them and let them know we want to see this happen. We want to see transitional facilities from prison to the community. You know, we want to see there's been prisoners who have actually been permanently damaged by even contracted medical providers with the Department of Corrections. You know, once they become contracted, they become employees of the department. And this is where whatever they're being told, they go by it. So they're not doing what they vowed to do when they got their degrees in the medical field. You know, when you vow to represent anybody, or there's been lawyers who have represented people they didn't want to represent, but this is what they vowed to do when they got their, you know, their law license and they went into practice.
Now, if you talk about doctors and Hippocratic Oath, they take an oath to do no patient any harm. But as soon as the doctor's been around for a while, he develops a God complex because people are always kissing his ass. They're always saying, oh, thank you, doctor. You know, oh, you mean you stuck my uncle with a needle that's going to cause almost permanent damage? Well, thank you, doctor. I know you were trying your best. So these doctors think they can get away with anything. You know,
that's
so I don't. As a matter of fact, it's because of them and their God complex that has kept me from getting sick, because I won't. I'm not going to see a doctor. So they have kept me away from them because of their attitude. I almost punched a doctor one time in the VA. Guy got on my fucking nerves. So he knew it, and he backed down real quick. But, you know, I was lucky he backed down. If he didn't back down, I punched him. Yeah, I could have ended up in jail. But lucky me.
It doesn't take much these days, especially with the pandemic and everybody's frustration over everything that's going on. It doesn't take much before somebody's going to get into a road rage or some kind of a provocation. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon, too. In Ottawa, it's going to happen with other convoys. They're
going to be provoked by
the police, and then the mainstream media will spin it out of control, making it seem as though it were the truckers who started the fracas.
Isn't that
the truckers have been very, very peaceful. Huh?
Isn't that the media? They always blow things out of proportion, or they report news that they don't even have the full facts on. Once they report that news, it's in the minds of everybody. So even if it didn't happen the way they initially said it happened, people are already with the mindset that it happened. You know, so is it still going on in Ottawa? Or I thought the police or the military scattered them all, that they ended up leaving in Ottawa, and they went to Washington.
If they did too go to Washington, they're joining up with another group. I think they're still in Ottawa. They are being abused by the police, but I think they're holding their ground so far now. They're getting a lot of support from the Ottawan citizens. A lot of people are giving them chocolate, coffee, food, accommodations, et cetera. So this is something which not only Canada, but which America needed. And there's going to be freedom, what are they going to call it? I just call it a freedom tour. They don't like the word convoy, but a freedom tour to D.C. pretty soon, and I hope that's successful. But I'm going to put myself on mute, so I don't hijack the show like I said.
putting the convoy, these people coming together for that, whether some might disagree or some might agree, that's what you call the government is the people. The people are taking what they feel the government should be doing. They're doing it in place of the government. So that's why I say a lot of times when things are occurring, the people forget that they are the government, and they're expecting legislative members, Congress, or whatever, to make the decisions without any opposition. And sometimes the people who are the government needs to put it out there what they're in favor of and what they want to see happen. We have too much injustice in this country, and unless the people speak out, it's not going to get resolved. And that's why I ask you, audience, you don't have to leave your home. All you need to do is to help these people who are spending the rest of their lives in prison, those who are being abused, those who are disabled in their 80s, their 70s, their 90s, disabled in wheelchairs and crutches. And I mean, these people can't defend themselves. So you can imagine what they're going through behind those prison walls. So all you need to do is pick up your phone, call your legislative members and say, we want to see justice, even in the penal system. We want to start seeing these people, a lot of these people being released, starting with the wrongfully convicted, starting with the mentally ill, and open up some mental facilities for these people. They shut down all the mental institutions in the country. For what? They shut them down. They let all these people mentally ill out in the streets to go where? I worked in a group home one time for autistic children, adults, and younger middle-aged adults at May Institute, and they were taking in a lot of these people that had autism, but they also took in a lot of other people who were able to do something for themselves but not be left alone. So they closed down these mental institutions. They left these people out in the streets to go where, we don't know. And so when things happen, they end up putting these people in prisons. The youth, instead of, there was the Big Brother, Big Sister program, and what was the one in Nebraska, for boys without fathers, without family. They have these programs. They don't have many more. And I want to say something even to our black leaders. Like, I know they have the National Action Network with Al Sharpton, but he's now on television, so he's feeling good about himself because he's before the media, which is something he always seems to look for. But there's a lot of these NAACP who are also doing their own thing. They got away from advocating for the incarcerated. They're only out in the media when and they're looking at working with education now because that's where money comes in, but they don't have to do a whole lot. Unless somebody gets killed or dies or whatever, then they join forces with Ben Crump and National Action Network, Al Sharpton. Oh, all of a sudden, Al Sharpton's out there. He's not on his show talking. He's out there getting his picture taken in the media. When your black youth or your black prisoners or whomever is crying out for help, don't wait until they die to go before the media and start talking trash, because that's what I call it. If you can't be there for them before they get beaten to death or shot to death or thrown in prison for life and life without parole, on death row or whatever, don't come out after the fact. And that's what we have too with our leaders of color. And I'm not leaving them out either, because when I talk about the injustices, we have a lot of injustice in this country. We have a lot of racism. We have a lot of hatred and anger. So what happens when it comes to racism? People of color run to the person that they are trying to get help from that's of color, and they get denied. But yet when something happens, those very people are out there talking about the injustices in America. Well, hello, you're part of it. If you can't be there for your people when they need you, don't come out for them after, or their families. And I want to talk about all of you with loved ones inside that complained all over Facebook, talking about the injustices, talking about your babies being abused and deprived. But yet, what are you actually doing to help them? Are you joining any of these advocacy groups that are trying to work on change? Are you picking up the phone and calling the media or calling the legislative members to say that things need to change, to offer suggestions? No. And then a lot of you don't even realize when you're sending all this money to your loved ones, thinking you're doing something for them, think about where that money's going. Because let's face it, if they went into prison for substances, they're going in the wrong place, because that's where all the substances are going to be found. Go on the internet and type in drugs being smuggled in by guards. Because guards are making a profit off of your loved ones that you're sending hundreds of dollars to, $70, $100 a month. There was a time when people went to prison and their loved ones didn't have to send money. Because when somebody goes to prison, the Department of Corrections is they're in the custody of the Department of Corrections. That means the Department of Corrections is supposed to be caring for them, taking care of their needs, medical, psychological, dental, whatever it might be. But thanks to many of you who are up there giving your loved ones all this money every month, they're expecting it from everybody. So where's the money going to the budget? Right in the pockets of the very people that are abusing your loved ones, depriving your loved ones. And people in the audience that think that they're getting away with so much, these people incarcerated, they did the crime and they're eating steak and they're eating lobster and all this stuff. They're eating nothing. The staff is getting it all. The prisoners are getting a lot of mashed potatoes, a lot of rice, a lot of fattening foods to make them look like they're fattening up, so make them look like they're getting a lot of good food. But your money is going right into the people that are abusing your loved ones. So for you mothers out there crying because your babies are being abused, and yet you're doing nothing to stop it. Many of you probably are happy that they're there. I saw where one mother on Facebook put down she was happy that her son was in prison because he wasn't doing drugs. The mentality. You wonder why a lot of these people end up in prison. It's because they never had the support that they should have had, whether it be from the biological home or from the community. You have a lot of these young people that join gangs. You know why? Because they came from homes where there was a lot of drugs going on in the first place. Or their mothers and fathers, domestic violence. Or the fathers with their pants hanging down to their ankles, where all these kids want to try to be like them. But they didn't have the support that they should have had. And the parents or parents weren't there to hear them. So they go looking for that support elsewhere. They come up to other people that are going through the same thing, other adolescents, other youth that are going through the same thing. They say they stand by one another. They get tight. They become gang members. But not gang members to go out there and do good in the community. Gang members to go out there and let out their frustration on anyone they can, because they're full of anger. They're full of pain. That's what it is, mothers and fathers and people in the communities. A lot of these gang members are full of pain. They're seeking support. They're seeking role models, which no one in this day and age is a role model for anyone. Then you have those who had no parents, no siblings, and yet try to maintain. They try to do everything that was right so people would like them, people would respect them. And they fall into a vulnerable situation. And sometimes that situation involves white and black. And we know sometimes that the white population has a gung-ho attitude. They can do anything and get away with it, even if it means messing up somebody's mind. And when that individual's mind gets messed up and all the abuse that they've gone through as children, the traumas catch up with them, and they do something that they regret immediately after. But yet that one mistake causes them to go to prison for life, or life without parole, or death row. One mistake. Had it been reversed, had it been a white person that did it to a person of color, that person wouldn't get life without, if they were first-time offender, never involved with the law before, never involved with any kind of substances, worked since their young age, went through high school, prep school, college, and in the last year of college was stumbled, fell behind on one subject because that person they got involved with spent all the time up at the dormitory that last year, not being able to graduate, disclosing something that happened at a young age that was traumatic, and then finding out that your mate from that first time relationship was also using, lying and cheating and abusing you. So you end up in prison for a first time mistake. But that's not enough. That person's family has connections, which is going to prevent you, because the connections are in and out of the penal system, which is going to prevent you from doing anything while incarcerated. So now you're in a cell 22 hours a day. You're unable to do anything because all of your belongings were taken from you. You've been denied every opportunity to enroll in educational correspondence courses, work programs, anything. Where does that leave you? Where does that leave people? It leaves them right where they are in a cell, 22 hours a day, rotting away, someone that could be doing so much good for others as they did before, but they're being kept because that other family, that other side was that corrupt, deceptive, was that evil, was that hateful, that this person that made one mistake in their life was sentenced to a life in life without parole or death row. Think about it. When you start stereotyping prisoners, think about the differences in prisoners. Think about the meaning behind it. Think about what they've gone through. Think about the support. And family members who turn their back on their incarcerated loved ones. Think about what was going on before that. Were you there for them? Were you helping them? Were you even in court with them when they went to court for their trial? Have you written them? Have you visited them? Have you advocated for them? Have you joined any advocacy groups to help them? Have you called legislative members or the media? I remember there was one person who had committed a crime and left the country. It wasn't the federal that went looking for the person. It was the very people from the community in which the crime happened. But there was also another one. He was a detective from the same place that the offender was from. He claimed that he knew the defender, the suspect, which he didn't. But what did he do? He put had this big article written up in the paper about how he tried to console the person when they did find him. The person they were looking for had gone through trauma as a child. He was violated. And this officer, this detective, was a perpetrator which nobody knew about. He was a police officer, and while his wife was working all the time, and they had her 10-year-old sister babysitting their two little children, this police officer was backtracking when the wife was working. He was going back to the home. He was molesting his sister-in-law, his 10-year-old sister-in-law. And he's a detective. No one knew about that. Even the sister-in-law, even his wife, ex-wife, to this day, doesn't know that her ex-husband had been violating her little sister. But yet a lot of other people know and have not said anything about it. These are things that happen that we need to look at. Those people behind prison walls, they did a crime and they are doing their time. They're doing more than their time when it comes to what they have to go through while in prison. It's those people on the outside that have not yet been caught, or they have not been sentenced or charged or incarcerated because of their titles, their roles as police officers, governors, legislative members, anybody with some power and money or people that they know of their peers in higher places. So they get away with it. I remember a case in Rhode Island, Escobar. I can't remember the name, but I remember the last name was Escobar. And there was a police detective that was trying to help him because he was having problems. And that detective ended up getting shot. He had brought this young man into his office, and there were other police officers in the office with him. They claimed that was this Escobar that took the detective's gun and shot the detective, killed the detective, and then jumped out of the window. I think it was like a third-story building or something. There was always question about that. People said that they believe that detective was shot by his own, and it was made to look like that kid had done it. I was watching TV, and when they brought that kid into the courtroom, the trial, his face, they had a big thing on. It looked like, I don't know what kind of a mask they had over his face because he had been beaten. So they claimed that it was from the fall. His face was all messed up. And his sister in the courtroom screamed. She said, look what they did to him. And the judge threw the family out. The judge threw her out because she let out a scream when she saw her brother. Now, if that judge was in her place, that judge probably would have done the same thing. And the judge that would be behind or on the bench would probably not have said anything except to please be quiet. But that kid, I don't know whatever happened to him, but I know he did get sentenced to prison for life. I don't know what the situation is now. But as an advocate for prisoners for the last 20 years, 25 years as an advocate, I have come across so many different cases, different individuals who are incarcerated. I have met with so many families. And that's why I can actually say we should not stereotype, because there's a lot of good families out there who have loved ones behind those prison walls. Now, I'm going to tell you the restorative justice. I believe that everybody, victim, victim's family, and the incarcerated individuals should come together. And that's why restorative justice, Van Jones is one that has been working on that. There was Brian Stevenson. There's been other people, even in the communities, who are about restorative justice. And there's been a lot of families who have agreed to come together with the perpetrator, with the offender, to get some closure. Because putting someone in prison for life without parole or life sentences, for executing someone, it's not going to bring closure. It may for some families, but you wonder what families is going to be for the death penalty. And there's a lot of families who want the death penalty for the person that offended their loved one or that did whatever to their loved one. Is that what God would do? Would God want the death penalty? You know, I say this all the time. I want to say it again. God forgave Moses, King David, and Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, all murderers. They all killed, especially Paul. He killed hundreds and hundreds of Christians. But God forgave them and used them in a big way. They weren't thrown into prison for life. They weren't executed. So any family, so-called Christian, wants the death penalty, needs to look at what was behind the cause of this person's failure or the cause of their loved one being executed or murdered or whatever the case may be. I would want to go before the person that offended or killed or whatever my loved one to find out why, to find out what happened. And I have every Wednesday on the show at 1 o'clock Eastern time, I interview Marion Jacob, psychosocial therapist, again from the Netherlands, who talks about not looking at the offender and not looking at the crime, but looking at the cause behind the crime. Marion Jacobs is on Facebook, Deeper Justice. And she has recently written a book, which will be out in another month or so. And if you want to hear Marion Jacobs talk about the damaging effects of so much and the causes of crime, listen in tomorrow, Wednesday, at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And you can call in. The call-in number is 657-383-1630. And again, please, audience, if you can in any way, try to look at each and every situation in a different manner. Try to call your legislative member, legislative leaders, and talk to them about criminal justice reform and looking into all of these situations, cases, individually, and not stereotyping and judging them all. So I thank you all for listening in. I hope you'll be on with us tomorrow, again at 1 o'clock Eastern Time. And the call-in number is 657-383-1630. Learn how you can help and learn more about the causes behind the crimes. And try to be a role model for the young people in the communities in your areas so that they don't fall and end up in prison as well. I thank you all for being on board with us, and I look forward to having all of you listening in tomorrow and perhaps calling in as well. So have a good day, and God bless.